Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 101 in this series entitled Animal Love versus Human Love, To Be or to Create. Chapter 39. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 9th of Iyar, 5760.
Good evening. We are up to the 39th chapter, Perek Lamedtes. Someone once asked the Teldus Yaakov Yosef, or Yaakov Yosef of Pilna, who was one of the two greatest students of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Chassidus, how is it that he takes off so much time of his learning and his studying Torah and so forth in order to travel to his Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov? Where did he find the justification for such type of behavior? So the Teldus Yaakov Yosef responded and said that the Gemara brings in Ksuvas Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Mevatlan Talmud Torah Lehitzas Hamesul Achnasas Kala, that one may cease learning Torah for two purposes: for accompanying the person who passed on his last journey, going to the funeral. And achnasa leitzas hames literally means taking out the dead person in order to bury him. And lachnasa skala, on the other extreme, to bring a bride to her wedding. To go to a funeral, heaven forbid, or the other extreme, to go to a wedding. So he says, mevatlan talmud Torah, one is allowed to cease for the moment to study Torah leitzas hames, metaphorically, to take out the deadness of your own heart and soul. To bring in a kala into your heart. Kala means bride. It comes from the word yearning, aspiration, as in klais hanefesh, to remove the deadness, the apathy, the indifference towards godliness from your heart, and to bring in a yearning, an inspiration, an animation, a sense of spiritual vitality. He says, I close the book, and I get on the road to go to my Rebbe, to the Holy Baal Shem Tov, which is connected to the theme that Alter Rebbe began to develop in chapter 38 concerning the utmost necessity of kavana, of meditation and passion that must accompany and should accompany the Jewish experience, the learning Torah and the observance of mitzvahs. As the Alter Rebbe explained in Lamed Ches in 38, that the microcosmic condition of the Jew reflects the macrocosmic division into four categories: the inorganic world, doimim, the organic world, semeach, the animal kingdom, chai, and the human race, medaber, corresponding to the four letters of Hashem's name, yud, kei, vav, kei, and corresponding to the four elements of the Jewish experience. Every Jew operates in four modes: the physical, concrete mitzvahs are the inorganic elements of the Jewish experience. The mitzvahs connected with speech and thought where the Jew verbalizes words or engages in certain thoughts as davening, learning, saying blessings, benching, reciting the Shema, and so forth, these correspond to the vegetative, to the botanic element of the Jewish experience. Then there is the passion, the soul, that accompanies either the concrete physical mitzvahs or the mitzvahs connected with speech and thought, and that soul, inner meditative consciousness and spiritual inspiration that accompany the mitzvahs reflect the animal and the human elements of the Jewish experience. The cognitive, meditative love and awe reflects the human Jewishness, and the instinctive, natural love and awe, if it is aroused in the Jewish heart, is the animal experience within Judaism. In continuation to this comes chapter 39. Now, Perek Lamed Tes and Mem are a continuation to chapter 38, to Perek Lamed Ches. The following two chapters are quite complicated, as you shall see. They're complicated due to various reasons. First and foremost, their style, the issues they address. Nonetheless, if you examine them and meditate upon them deeply, you discover a meticulous construction that the Alter Rebbe constructs in these following two chapters, developing and articulating the theme of Kavana and the various states of spiritual consciousness that can accompany a mitzvah, corresponding to the four worlds. There is astonishing depth in these chapters and a lot of reference to different Kabbalistic sources, much more than in the previous chapters. We shall try to do our best in studying them and applying them to our personal day-to-day lives, which is the primary goal and objective of all of the Tanya, Ki Karev Veilecha. So let's learn inside. Perek Lamed Tes. For this reason too, Nikrayim HaMalachim B'Shem Chayis U'Behemis. The angels, the Malachim, are called Chayis and Behemis, beasts and animals. K'diksiv, as it's written in Yecheskel Perek Aleph, U'Pnei Aryeh HaYamin V'Gemer U'Pnei Shemeh HaSmel V'Gemer. And an angel with the face of a lion is to the right, and the face of an ox is on the left, etc. The Alter Rebbe is referring here, of course, to the famous vision of Yecheskel the prophet in the beginning of Sefer Yecheskel, known as Maisa Merkava, the account of the chariot, where Yecheskel describes the supernal transcendental vision that he has experienced in his prophecy, which is considered one of the most mystical chapters in the whole of the Tanakh. And there Yecheskel, to give a very general, extremely general depiction of his vision, Yecheskel begins by seeing Eifanim, various beings that he expresses through the metaphor of Eifanim, wheels. Above them, a firmament, a rakia. Above them are the actual chariot, which are four supernal beings, four supernal chayas, four supernal beasts, reflected in the face of a lion, the face of an ox, the face of a human being, and the face of an eagle. These four living beasts, as he calls them, chayes, beings, are carrying the throne, the kiseh. Thus, they are defined as the chariot, as the wagon which is carrying the throne. Va'al d'mus ha-kiseh, va'al ha-kiseh d'mus kemari adam. And on the throne, he has the image of a supernal man sitting on the throne. I mention these details because they will be extremely relevant to the discussion and the continuation of the chapter. In any case, we see from here that malachim, the supernal angels, are defined in Tanakh as animals and beasts. So the Alter Rebbe says, in light of what has been explained of the definition of animal love versus human love, we understand one of the reasons for this, levisha einam bali pchira. For they too, the malachim too, have no freedom of choice between good and evil. V'yirasam va'avasam itivis lahem. And their awe and love of Hashem is natural to them. It's instinctive to them. It's intrinsic. It's innate to them. K'meisha kasev v'rayim ehemne parashas Pinchas, as is written in Rayim ehemne, a certain section of Zayar and the parasha of Pinchas. So for an angel, loving or fearing, experiencing awe from Hashem is as natural as the fact that my body craves sleep or food. It's not something it has to create, acquire, challenge. Challenge itself in order to attain, struggle in order to experience, and so forth. Rather, the Malach really has no free choice whether to be inspired, whether to be moved by Hashem or not, just as the spider doesn't have any free choice whether to weave its web or not, or the cub has no free choice whether to devour its victim when it's hungry, and the dove doesn't have free choice whether to gaze into the eyes of its mate, and so forth. And that's really one of the reasons the similarities between the Malach, the supernal angel, and the physical beast in the physical world. Both of them are pre-programmed as to how to respond to life and how to react to life. Obviously, it's on two drastically different planes. We're not going to compare the hyena or the rabbit to Malach Michal or to Malach Matat or to Malach Gavriel, the various angels. But nevertheless, in this key point, that what they are, they are. And all of their behavioral patterns, emotional instincts, and loves and fears are pre-programmed within their condition. Here lay a powerful common denominator between the Malach, the spiritual beast, and the physical beast, and thus Yecheskel calls them Chayis and Behemoths. Zagdal Terebbe, it's interesting, in the Raya Mehemna there, in Parshas Pinchas, the Zohar defines the Malachim also as Arba Chayin Tivim, which means four natural animals, discussing the four general collective groups of angels, Michal, Gavriel, Uriel, and Rifal, explaining that they also correspond to the four elements that comprise creation, the four fundamental elements mentioned in chapter 1 of Tanya, Eish, Ruach, Mayim, Afar, fire, water, air, and earth. Michal corresponding to the element of water, Gavriel to the element of fire, Uriel, Aleph of Reish to the element of Ruach, of Ir, Avir, and Rifael, Aleph Fei Reish, corresponding to the element of Afar, earth or ashes, and so forth. Zagdal to Rebbe, V'lachain, and therefore, Mailas had Tzadikim G'dayla Mehem. Tzaddikim are on a higher level than the Malachim, which the Gemara says is on a head in Tzaddikimel. Rabbi Yochanan derives from a pasuk in Daniel Perigimel that Gedolim Tzaddikim Yosim Malachi Hasharis. That Tzaddikim are greater than the angels. Zagdal to Rebbe, why? Ki Madir Neshames HaTzaddikim Uba'ilam HaBriya. Because the abode of the souls of Tzaddikim is in the world of Briya, the world of creation. Mother Hamalachim Ba'ilam Hayitzira versus the abode of the angels, which is in the world of Yitzira, of formation, not in the world of initiation, but in the world of development, of formation. And Alter Rebbe immediately qualifies the statement in the Hagan, the footnote on the side. V'hainu b'stamalach. This statement is only valid in the case of ordinary angels. However, there are higher angels that operate within the structure of the world of creation, whose service of Hashem is with intelligent awe and love. As it's written in Rayim Ehemne there in Parshas Pinchas, that there are two kinds of holy chayis, tivim v'sichlam, instinctive and intelligent. As is also written in Eitz Chaim in Shar Nun. So the above mentioned statement in inside, in the Pnim, in the inner text of the Tanya, refers to ordinary angels. Their abode is within the structure of the world of formation. Now what is the meaning in the Zagdal Tereb? V'ahevdol shebineyim hu. The difference between them, the structure of Bria and the structure of Yetzirah, is as follows. Ki ba'olam ha'yitzira, in the world of Yitzira, me'irus sham midaisav shalein seif baruchu levade. Only the midais, the emotional expressions of the energy of Ein Sof radiate there. Shehein, namely, avasai, his love. And the fear and the awe of him, and so on and so forth, the remainder of the emotional expressions, tiferes, netzach, hayd, yisoid, and so forth, this is the key factor that defines the element of the world of Yetzirah. As it's written in Tikkuni Zayar, in Tikkun Vav, as well as in Eitz Chaim, in Shaar Mem Zayin. The Sheet Svirin Mekanin in Biyitzira. That the six Sviros nest in the world of Yitzira. The six Sviros referring to the six emotional emanations of Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hayd, Yisoid. Attraction, constriction, empathy, competitiveness, surrender, and bonding, they nest, they dwell, they pervade the world of Yetzirah. Therefore, this defines the service of the angels, constantly, never ceasing day or night, lamed biyirav afachat chuli, to stand in constant and perpetual awe and fear of Hashem. V'hainu kol machine Gavriel shemeh hasmoil. This refers to the entire host of angels under Gavriel, Gabriel, which is on the left. Left representing the introverted, internalizing emotional expressions connected to the gvura, to rejection. The service of the host of angels under Michal is on the other hand, in the love of Hashem, on the right hand, on the right side. Because since the abode of Malachim is in the world of Yetzirah, and what defines the world of Yetzirah is the emotional revelation of godliness, or rather, as godliness expresses itself within emotions, Shitzvirin Mekanin and Biyitzirah, as the Zayin Eitz Chaim put, the six emotions, they are what nesting Yitzirah primarily. So as a result of that, the creatures that populate that world, namely the Malachim, their life, day and night, is characterized by an unceasing, never-end, infinite, powerful, intense affection, emotion, burning love and awe and so forth towards Hashem. Avol b'olam habriya. However, in olam habri, in the world of creation, me'irei sham chachmasay obinasay v'daitay shalayin sayv baruchu. They irradiate the chachma, the conception, the bina, the comprehension, the das, the application of the blessed Ein Sof. Shehein mekir hamidus, which are they? These three elements of Chachma bin Adas are the source of the emotions of the Midas, Ve'em v'sheirish len, and serve as their mother and as their root, as their core, as their source. Okedeis b'tikunim, as it's written again in Tikkuni Zayar, there in Tikkuni Vav, the imayla mekanena b'tlas sviran b'karsaya. That imayla, which means the supernal mother, referring to the attribute of Bina, defined as the mother, Chachma, conception, is the father who grants and imbues the mother with the seed of life, with the kernel. Bina is the faculty of comprehension, which takes that seed, conceives it, fertilizes it, develops it, nurtures it, and then gives birth. Zogda Zayar, Imayla, the supernal mother, referring to the supernal attribute of Bina, described as the mother, nests. Bikursaya in the throne, meaning in the world of Briya, Shehu Olam HaBriya, the world of the throne, Kursaya is the Kisei, that is Olam HaBriya. And the Alter Rebbe adds, Bitlas Sfiron, which means the Supernal Mother nests in the throne with the three Sfirois, Chachma, Bina, and Das. It comes along to nest in the throne, accompanied by the other attributes of Chachma and Das. Kabbalah discusses at length the concept of the 10 spheres, the 10 modes of expression, which Hashem emanated from Himself, the undefined, indivisible, unlimited reality of Hashem. So to speak, emanated from Himself 10 personality modes, 10 modes of expression, if you wish, through which He creates, sustains, and relates to the universe. And specifically, these 10 spheres are divided into 4 partsufim, 4 countenances, 4 configurations. And they vary within each of the 4 worlds. The highest world, the world of Atzilus, the world of intimacy, of closeness, which is the first structure in which Hashem emanates from Himself these 10 attributes, or these 10 defined traits. There is one partsuf, and then in the next world, the world of Bria, there is a second partsuf, a second countenance, which means a second type of expression of these spheres, and then in the world of Yetzirah, a third, and in the world of Asiyah, a fourth. There's one specific partsuf that dominates primarily in each specific world. These partsufim are Chachma, the first attribute, conception. The next one is Bina, comprehension. The third partsuf is Ze'ir Ampin, the 6 midas, Chesed through Yisoid. And the fourth partsuf is Malchus, confidence or sovereignty. In Atzilus, in the first world, Chachma is the predominant partsuf. Chachma is the predominant sphera. Obviously, it contains all 10. But they're all filtered through Chachma. They're all an expression of Chachma. In Bria, which is defined as Olam HaKisei, the world of the throne, Bina is the dominant parts of. So this is what the Zohar is saying here. Ima Ilah, what's the primary sphere that characterizes Bina and from which all other attributes of Bina are produced? It's Ima Ilah, the supernal mother, Bina. Yitzirah is dominated by Shit Sfirin, by the Ze'er Ampin, by the small face as it's known, the 6 Midos, which together constitute the parts of Ze'er Ampin, Chesed through Yisoid. That's the key feature of Yitzirah. Not Imailah, but rather all of the attributes of Yitzirah are an outgrowth, are a product of the 6 Midos. And then in Asiyah, it's primarily Malchus. This, everything I've just mentioned, seems justifiably extremely otherworldly, mystical, certainly irrelevant to most of our psychological, emotional, physical, daily struggles in our homes, in our careers, in our relationships, and so forth. And that's why the Alter Rebbe came to the world. So really, in these chapters, we will be able to get an insight, to glean an insight into the nature of these 4 worlds and their reflection in the microcosm, in the experience of every single Jew in his or her daily life. So the Alter Rebbe is developing here the theme in connection with the various modes in which the Jew operates, whether he experiences animal kavana, animal love towards Hashem, or human love towards Hashem, beginning the chapter by saying that the malachim, the angels, are compared to animals in the sense that they don't have free choice, and they operate within the world of emotions of Yetzirah, versus the tzaddikim that operate within the world of Bria. Bria is differentiated from Yetzirah in the fact that there we have the revelation of Hashem's wisdom. Godliness is not expressed within the emotional realm, but rather within the intellectual realm. Zogad Alter Rebbe v'lachein, therefore, hu mader neshames ha-tzadikim. Since the world of Bria is the receptacle, the world which is pervaded by the three spheres of Chachma Bina Das, therefore it is the abode of the souls of the tzaddikim. Which tzaddikim? Oivdei Hashem b'dechilu rechimu. Those tzaddikim who serve Hashem with awe and love. Hanim shachis min habina v'udas tigdula sein seif baruch hu. The love and awe that stems from the understanding and the knowledge of Hashem's awesomeness. That type of love and awe. A love that is a result of awareness, of meditation, of understanding. For this love is called Reusa de Liba, the intimate desire of the heart. Reusa is the Aramaic Zoharic term for an intimate desire. Reusa means Ratzin, but not just an external will, an intimate will. So this type of love that's born as a result of awareness, it's the love that it exists in the world of Bria, and thus the tzaddikim, who experience this type of love that is born from understanding and awareness, their abode is in the world of Bria. Zagad al Terebbe, umiri'us adalib, nasa levush l'neshama ba'ilam ha'briya. From this ru'usa deliba that a soul experiences, a real love born out of one's intellect and understanding, this experience creates a garment. It forms a garment for the soul in the world of Bria, shehu gan eden ha'elyon kedelekamon, which is also the higher level of paradise of the Garden of Eden, as we will explain soon in the chapter. Ukamei shekasuv b'zayir v'yakel, as is written in Zayir v'yakel, that this type of love, ru'usa deliba, forms an energy, which really creates a cloak, a garment for the soul through which it can interact with gan eden ha'elyon, the higher level of gan eden after its life in this world, the world of Bria. Bear with me for another few moments. Achainu dafke neshamis mamish. But Alter Rebbe says, this statement, that the abode of tzaddikim who serve Hashem with cognitive love and awe is in the world of Bria, applies only to neshamis, which means to those souls which operate within the level of neshama. Shein b'chinnes meichin de gadlus sein seif baruch hu, which represent a superior intellectual perception of the infinite one. Avo b'chinnes haruach shel ha-tzadikim, but the tzadikim who operate within their spiritual mode of ruach, not neshama, v'chein shar kol neshama sisra. And similarly, all the other souls of Israel, sha'ov du'as Hashem, who served Hashem, with the natural awe and love hidden in the heart of all the Jewish people, not a love and an awe that was created as a result of meditation, but with that love that is intrinsic, that is programmed into the very stuff, into the very chemistry of a Yid, they ain oilos l'sham rak b'shabbos v'rish chodesh levad. These souls don't ascend there to the world of Bria only on Shabbos and on the new moon, on Rish Chodesh. The beginning of the month, the first day of the month, which is a uniquely spiritual day, as we shall see, as we shall explain. During those 2 days, Shabbos of every week and Rish Chodesh, these souls ascend from their natural abode to the abode of Bria. Derech Ha'amud. How do they create and make this ascent? Here we go to the next step. One bomb after another bomb here. Derech ha'amud shemigan eden atachtel negan eden alyon. By means of the pillar that extends from the lower Garden of Eden to the higher Garden of Eden, show oilam habriya, what is the higher Gan Eden, like he mentioned? Oilam habriya, the world of Bria, nikr Gan Eden alyon, which is defined in Kabbalah and Zohar in various places as Gan Eden alyon, as the supernal Gan Eden. So through that pillar, which connects ultimately the two Gan Edens, the Gan Eden of the world world of Yitzira, Gan Eden HaTacht in the lower paradise. And the higher paradise, the Gan Eden of the world of Bria, they make that journey, that ascent on Shabbos and Rish Chodesh. And what happens is that ascent affects the following condition, Lis'aneg al Hashem v'lehonis meziv Hashchina. They experience delight and pleasure in Hashem, basking in the radiance of the Shechina. Ki ein hana v'tainug l'seichel nivra. Ela b'meshem maskil u'mevin v'yedeya u'masig v'sichloy u'binasoy ma'sha efsher loy lahavin u'lahasig me'erin seif baruch hu. The intellect of a created being delights and derives pleasure only in that which it conceives, understands, knows, and grasps with its intellect and understanding as much as it can grasp of a blessed Ein Sof energy. Through his wisdom and his understanding which radiate there in the world of Bria. So therefore, only when the neshamas ascend from the world of Yetzirah to the world of Bria, can they really experience that ultimate, absolute, overwhelming delight, basking and bathing and enjoying the radiance of the Shekhinah. Because when can there be the true fulfillment and pleasure of any created being, of the intellect of any created being, only when understands and comprehends and internalizes that which it can comprehend from the energy of Ein Sof, which is only in the world of Bria. So even the tzaddikim, who serve Hashem on a higher level, it's only their neshama that dwells in Bria, because we know that the soul itself operates in three modes. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. Nefesh is the more functional elements of the divine soul. Ruach are the passionate elements, and Neshama are the cognitive elements. So the Neshama elements of the Tzaddik are connected to Bria always, constantly. But all other souls, and even the Ruach of the Tzaddikim, they are essentially connected to Yetzirah, like the Malachim, just on Shabbos and Rish Chodesh, they transcend even the level of the Malachim, even though all week they're really similar to the Malachim. Now, what is the Alter Rebbe telling us here? Cognitive, cognition, awareness, intelligence, understanding, Seichel. You understand what Alter Rebbe is saying? I should ask you on Shabbos.
Is it different between Rosh Chodesh and the full moon?
Rosh Chodesh is not the full moon. Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of the month. The full moon is usually on the 15th day of the month. That's off. Rosh Chodesh, sometimes you don't even see the moon. Usually don't see the moon. There's a uniqueness on the 15th day of the month, but here he's addressing Rosh Chodesh.
I heard that on Shabbos
there is a careful, there is a very nuanced structure that Alter Rebbe is erecting here. By no means will the splendor of this edifice become apparent at the moment. We must, in order to behold and appreciate the full depth of the concept being developed, have patience till we conclude 39 and 40, and then see what the Alter Rebbe did in these three chapters, 38 and 39 and 40, really revolutionizing our understanding of the nature of the two elements that characterize Yiddishkeit. A, the Torah and Mitzvahs element of Yiddishkeit, the actual behavioral life of the Jew, learning, davening, doing mitzvahs, practically. And B, the Kavana, the spiritual experience that must accompany Jewish life and Jewish observance and so forth. And the role that each one plays and carries and so on and so forth within the personal life of the Jew, within the cosmic destiny of history, and within the overall purpose of why Hashem created the world and so forth. But let's stop here for a moment and examine what the Alter Rebbe said till now. Apparently, at first glance, it seems very difficult to understand. Everybody sees that the Alter Rebbe is exalting drastically the power of intellect versus emotions, saying Yetzirah is inferior to the world of Bria. Yetzirah is an emotional world. Bria is an intellectual world, a cognitive world, a meditative world, and so forth. Angelic love is compared to animal love, as he discussed at the end of last chapter, which is emotional. It's powerful, it might be overwhelming, but nonetheless, it's disconnected from one's intellect. The true element, the true power is the world of Bria, which is about the intellect. Not the Shitzvirin Mekananin B'Yitzira, but Ima Ilah Mekananin B'Kursaya, the supernal mother versus the children. Now let's be honest about it. Emotions are far deeper, far more significant, far more admirable than intellect. Everybody knows that there are two types of Yidden. And tell me which is, who is on a higher level, who has worked more on himself or herself. There is a Jew who may learn and learn and learn and comprehend and understand and intellectualize and philosophize and meditate and so forth, but doesn't feel a thing and is totally indifferent and apathetic emotionally. And then there is a Jew who experiences feelings and emotions. Now, which is harder and more difficult to attain? No, of course, the latter. On the contrary, so many Jews struggle with the fact, and so many frum religious Jews struggle with the fact, that I'm learning and learning and learning, and I've learned all my life, and nonetheless, I am not inspired even a bit. It has no personal relevance. Midos is where the human being is alive, where it touches me, where I'm changed, where I'm transformed. Midos makes it personal. I'm vulnerable with it. I melt away with it. Seichel is detached. It really takes nothing for a person to understand and learn. It has no bearing on your soul and so forth. One of the Hasidim of the Rebbe Maharash, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, was a profound Torah scholar and always walked around with the two Svarim, Shari Oira and Shar HaEmunah from the Mittler Rebbe, the son of the Alter Rebbe. These are two of the most profound books in the Chabad Hasidic literature. And he was a Yid who was extremely well versed in these Svarim. Once he came into the Rebbe Maharash, so the Rebbe asked him about his schedule, his daily schedule. So he described his schedule. He says, in the morning I wake up at dawn and I learn Chassidus for a few hours. The Rebbe says, then he says, I meditate on the concepts of Chassidus for a long time. And then I daven, and during davening I meditate on spirituality and on godliness and on Chassidus. After davening, he says, I learn for a few hours. And then I learn again. And during the afternoon, I meditate again, and I learn Chassidus. And in the evening, before Maira, I learn Chassidus again, and I think on Chassidus, about Chassidus again, and so forth. So the Rebbe says, interesting. All day you're thinking about Chassidus. When do you think about yourself? So he fainted. He was a truly spiritually sensitive man. And as he fell into faint, the Rebbe says, fainting is not enough. You have to change. And he woke up, and as he was leaving the room, the Rebbe Maharash started to sing a song on the words in Shir HaShirim, Mashcheni acharecha narutza vi'ani amelech hadarav, where the bride cries and weeps and says, Mashcheni acharecha narutza, draw me in, let me run after you. Haviyani Amalechadarov, the king has brought me in into his chambers. And his son, the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, once delivered a discourse explaining why his father sang a song on these words following this conversation with the Chassid. But obviously the idea he was bringing out is that you can think and meditate about a certain truth, but when do you think about yourself? Where are you in all of this? Your soul, your heart, your psyche, your consciousness, and so forth. Here suddenly we see that the Midas experience is far inferior to the Seichel, to the cognitive experience. Yetzirah is a much lower world than Bria. But really, in understanding this paradox lay the whole, or at least part of the depth, I don't want to say the whole, part of the depth that the Alter Rebbe is conveying in this chapter. One of the things I could never understand was the story that occurs when Yaakov meets Yosef after 22 years of not seeing him. In Parshas Vayigash, Yosef reveals himself to his brothers who sold him to Egypt. Yaakov has thought that Yosef was devoured by a wild beast, by a chaya. Yosef was his favorite son. He could not be consoled, not be comforted. And for 22 years, he did not know that Yosef was alive. And those 22 years of his life were the most bitter, devastated. He was a broken man who could find no happiness, solace, or tranquility in his life. Finally, after everything that occurs, the Pasuk describes how Yaakov discovers the good news that Yosef is alive, and he makes the dramatic journey from the Holy Land to Egypt to Canaan. And when Yosef hears the news that Yaakov and his family, his father, is approaching Mitzrayim, Zog de Pasuk in Vayigash, Vayeser Yosef, Merkavtoi, Vayal Likras Yisrael, Aviv Goishna. Yosef harnesses his chariot and he travels upwards to greet his father in Goshen. Vayere Lov, Yosef appears to his father. Vayipol Al Tzavarov, Yosef falls on his father's neck. Vayef kal tzavarav oid, and he weeps on his father's neck excessively. More and more doesn't cease to weep. Zokter Ashi, aval Yaakov le nofal al tzavri Yosef, v'loi noshkoi. Yosef did not fall, Yaakov did not fall on Yosef's neck and did not kiss him. V'amru rabbi seinu shayakeri es shma. Our rabbis told us that Yaakov was busy with saying Shema. So Yosef is embracing his father and crying, weeping excessively, but Yaakov is learning Shema. Freg de Gerari, the Maral of Prague, Yosef was also a religious Jew who read Shema each morning. Why was Yosef not reading the Shema? Elamai, pshat is, Shema, you can read for a few hours. So Yosef either read it earlier or was going to read it after. So what happened to Yaakov? Are you going to tell me, he says, that Yaakov was a very religious Jew and since the dawn broke right then and there, so Yaakov immediately had to read Shema, Yosef knew, I can delay it a half an hour. No, he says. It's very weird to assume that. When Yaakov felt compelled to read Shema, certainly Yosef felt compelled to read Shema. One answer he gives, this is not the answer we're going to elaborate upon, but the Gerari brings an answer. This is not an answer that was molded within the chamber of Kabbalah and Chassidus, but it's rather a halachic balabatish answer. The Mishnah says in Brachas that there are certain interruptions. Usually you're not allowed to interrupt yourself in the middle of Shema. But there are certain moments and encounters where we permit the Jew to interrupt the Shema And one of them is that you're allowed to be mafsik. You're allowed to interrupt Shema mipnei hayira. If you're encountering someone and this person evokes profound awe and fear in you, you're allowed to be mafsik in the middle of Shema. So Yosef meets his father. He experiences very profound awe from his father, so he interrupts himself in the middle of Shema. But Yaakov is not scared of Yosef because it's his son. So Yaakov can't interrupt himself in the middle of Shema. That's why Yosef can hug him, but Yaakov can't hug him. No. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. But the real key question is another one. It's not a halachic question, I guess. It's more of a human, psychological, emotional question. What went through Yaakov's heart at that moment? For 22 years, he missed Yosef profusely. He couldn't sleep at night. He wouldn't stop crying. Now he sees Yosef. Yosef sees him. You can understand the intensity of your emotions after seeing a son, a child whom you haven't seen for 22 years, even if you didn't think he was dead. And Yosef indeed responds to the moment and falls on his father's neck and cannot cease crying, cannot cease weeping. And Yaakov, who is the father who lost his son, and the son of Rachel, who died at the age of 36, and his own Ben Skunim, his own favorite son, suddenly, Lai chipkai, lai nafal al tzavri Yosef, lai nashkai. The explanation in this, according to Chassidus, based on what the Gerari, what the Maharal of Prague writes there as well, is connected to understanding the difference between the world of Yetzira and the world of Bria. The basic difference that Chassidus explains between a human being and an animal is not just that an animal, from a Jewish point of view, versus many other point of views in the modern world today, that an animal is pre-programmed and a human being is ultimately not pre-programmed, which is in itself a revolutionary statement. Because today we often convince ourselves or are convinced by various studies and so forth that we're all pre-programmed. And as a result of our DNA and our genetic makeup and our environmental influences, and as a result of the thoughts that my mother had during pregnancy and her grandmother had when she was nursing and her grandmother had when she looked at her the wrong way and so forth, every person's emotions, instincts, behavioral patterns are predetermined and so forth. And Yiddishkeit, of course, acknowledges the profound impact that parents and genetics and DNA and environmental influences and abuse and positive elements all have on a person's behavior and emotions and so on and so forth, and you cannot deny it and paralyze sometimes people very severely. But nonetheless, the key or one of the most powerful pillars of the Yiddish, of the Torah perspective, is that a person can transcend his or her condition. A person has a spark of infinity within them, access through the mind through which you can transcend your subjective confinements and personalities, traits, and recreate your behavioral patterns and so forth. But beyond that, and really connected to that, and a consequence of that, to take it to the next level, Chassidus defines the difference between an animal and a human being as the difference between seichel and midos. What defines and makes a human being unique is his mind. What makes an animal unique are its emotions, its natural tendencies and proclivities and instincts. Now, what does that mean?